This is Studio Potter, the podcast. Rootedness, The Power of Peace, was first written and published by Richard Zane Smith on April 1st, 2022.
Rootedness. As a determined cultural revivalist, a full-time artist, and an active Wyandot tribal member, rootedness is a concept that becomes central in discussions in my studio practice and in any clay workshops or classes that I hold. I question, discuss, and reflect on what it is to be rooted as an Indigenous artist and to have a grasp of a heritage, a language, a cultural mooring that ties us to this very continent we live on, the very clay we work, the wood we cut for firing, the tools we make and shape our vessels with are from here. Here, the same lands where our creation stories were born, where corn, beans, and squash were first cultivated, and the stories of our Turtle Island were conceived. My mom, Gladys Zane, was from Kansas City, Kansas, attended Wyandot High School, where she told us that her classmates had no idea that the school was named for her Wyandot people, a Native American tribal group who had been forcibly removed from their homelands in Ohio and forced off of a steamboat unceremoniously at the juncture of the Kansas and the Missouri River during a cold and horrible rainstorm that lasted for weeks. Because of the flooding, the exposure, and broken hearts, over 200 people of our small nation died that first year. The dead were buried in what today is called the Wyandot National Burying Ground on the highest piece of land in Kansas City, Kansas, where her relatives, including grandparents, great-grandparents, a great-great-grandmother, and even her two baby brothers are buried. In this area of Kansas City, she grew up, where Indians were to be obscured beneath cheap stereotypes and ridicule. However, we kids were told to be proud of our heritage and were reminded that we were direct descendants of famed Chief Tarhe, who was one of the principal chiefs and an amazing orator at the signing of the Greenville Treaty. My father's folks, the Smiths, were born in the silty flatlands of the northeast corner of Arkansas. Their families were white sharecroppers who worked the cotton fields. Raised hardworking and with a desire to escape poverty, they moved to Kirkwood, Missouri, and lived in an old house where they kept a milk cow and chickens. Now, that cow had to be sold for bail to release Grandpa from jail as he was caught by revenuers for laying down money and removing a jar of corn whiskey from a certain old hollow tree. Interstate 44 plows right through where the old place used to be. My grandfather Smith, with sheer determination and by the skin of his teeth, worked and then took over a small dry cleaning business. Both sets of my grandparents came from a time when every family had large vegetable gardens and children were expected to pull their weight of work around the home. I don't believe I ever tasted store-bought jam or jelly till my grandmother Zane passed away. Her garden filled her entire backyard. The 1960s were times of troubling social unrest, and my folks felt it was their Christian and moral duty and obligation to stand on the side of justice and racial equality. When white flight was occurring and terrified whites were leaving the cities, my folks thought that was the time to move into the city of St. Louis and hopefully help to make some kind of difference. They found a large old three-story home in a university city suburb and so signed a scary floating mortgage that was to be a financial nightmare, but they accepted the challenge. I was just turning 15, and I was horrified to move to the city. The only saving grace was that I'd no longer have to sleep on a plywood trundle bed that could roll out from under bunk beds and share a room with my two other brothers. I was to have a room of my own. This room became my workshop with tables, and in time the whole carpet was covered in wood chips and leather scraps from carving and making sandals and other leather goods. The room was complete with a sycamore stump and an anvil in the center of the room, and also a bent deer hoof as my doorknob, which my mother just loved to entice visitors to grab to give them a tour of my room. She was eternally proud of my hard work and dedication in creating things. This is where I submersed myself into my work, some functional, some simply carved useless objects I called sculpture. A deep grasp of rootedness brings a skinanye, or peace. Peace is a central force within our longhouse ceremonial traditions and lifeways that continue on into this very day. Our indigenous grandmothers made cooking vessels when there was peace in the villages. Pottery wasn't made when there were threats of war and bloodshed. When examining ancient sherds and tool marks, one can sense the kind of peace and calm that it took to make long, unwavering parallel lines, to notch the rims with careful, repeating indentations, and to spend the time making what was to become more than a simple container. It was a life-providing vessel used to feed the next generations. Much of the power of peace has been destroyed by horrific clash and overzealous attempts at domination by colonizers using more powerful weapons, exerting themselves over our ancestors as enemies that needed to be either destroyed or subdued, broken, reshaped into subjugation, patriotism, servitude, and often obedient pawns in warfare around the world. The ones rooted in their cultures who resisted or defied attempts to separate them from their traditions of this land were brought down hard. The violence, secret abuse, and the resulting trauma from the boarding school era is still coming to light. Replacement theologies of foreign religions brought ideas that were very different. Instead of understanding all life as a balance of positive and negative forces, mutually dependent, missionaries convinced many of a cosmic battle between absolute goodness and absolute evil. These concepts quickly began to infect our different indigenous cultures with fear and divisive ideologies, till we would view those we disagree with as absolutely evil. This new lens our ancestors were given to see the world changed us inside, and these paradigms began to rob our people of clarity and the deep connection to this land. The result was spreading emptiness, depression, substance abuse, and a sense of alienation, even in one's own lands. People began to lose a sense of belonging and their value and their responsibilities as true human beings. To be rootless leads to a sense of emptiness, painful longings, and a desperate grasping. Without roots, we're tumbleweeds blown about until we're snagged up in fence wire, or piled in dry washes. Trapped and piled, we sit helplessly waiting for the next wind to blow. Revitalization for Indigenous people is more than learning one's ancestral language. It's a process of total recovery. When we sing the songs of our ancestors and recite the speeches and ceremony, when we dance our unity dances, and when we cook our ancestral foods, when we work using our hands and ancestral clay and other materials of the earth, a rebirth becomes possible. There's a grasp of new life. There's a gasp of air as our lungs fill with fresh breezes, the scent of cedar and sweetgrass. Even Native Americans can forget how attached to Europe and other foreign countries the U.S. is until one travels through this land examining how imposed is the language, architecture, religions, fine arts, mostly from cultures so distant and far away. When Indigenous Americans are remembered on plaques at heritage sites or billboards along the highways, we're remembered in often romantic, decorative, or stereotypical forms, and again through the lens of foreigners who are viewing our ancestors shaped by novels and often misleading historical account. Sadly, when growing up away from our vibrant Native communities, we can ourselves succumb to the myths and the stereotypes that were created about us. When we finally recognize this within ourselves, it's a kind of horrifying, rude awakening. We aren't trying to return to the Stone Age. We are in recovery. In my workshops, I have students investigate their own ancient cultural pottery roots. The reason is not simply to make ancient replications, although that's where we start. The goal is to touch base with our ancestors, to attempt to reawaken within us an ancestral voice. It's not creating some New Age hyper-spiritual conglomerate which only adds to the confusion. Something happens when one is using hand-dug clay, handmade tools, creating work that would make our ancestors smile, and then cook in those vessels, cook traditional foods in them. We now know that DNA carries memory. Some of us feel like there's an awakening deep inside that is difficult to explain. Perhaps it is the ancestors who live on in us. Maybe if judged by outsiders, the finished work at workshops isn't flamboyant or slash and burn avant-garde, but what it does is so important. It brings healing. It's an awakening of our often dormant roots here in this land. Something that was once dried and set aside is taken from the shelf and is planted. In time, with persistence, with inner peace, something beautiful begins to grow. When we greet our people, we ask them, "Shaskinonye, how's your peace?" And the answer we hope to hear is, "Ayaskinotnya, I have peace."
Potter, the podcast, is about the Studio Potter archive and takes an insider look at the personal and technical stories within Studio Potter's 50-year legacy. This podcast bridges the past and present by looking at the archives in context of the current approaches and challenges we face as craftsmen.